Okay. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's do this. So, welcome to the first episode of Greenwich Cottage Podcast.
Woohoo!
I cleansed my apartment. We got the whole vibe set and ready. We smoked a couple bowls, and we are ready to tell you some crazy stuff. So first off, I'm Raina. I'm a tattoo artist, and I just have a really big interest in learning about the weird things people do and the creepy things people do, and I don't know. It's not that I find entertainment in it, but I find it interesting to learn about people and kind of maybe why they did things and stuff like that. So I've always had an affixation with true crime and paranormal stuff, and I love talking about it, and pretty much anybody can make a podcast. So
here's to anybody's on a microphone making a podcast. Well, I'm Sabrina. I'm a barber. I love all the true crime, spooky-ooky things. And I just want to, you know, chit-chat because I don't have enough friends that want to hear me info dump for an hour about this stuff. So I'm going to make all of you do it.
Yeah.
To also add to the ambiance, by the way, we've got a little spell bowl here that Raina's done. We're surrounded by squishmallows and ambient lighting. It's perfect.
Yeah, it's a really big vibe. My cat's snoring behind me, and I'm really hoping that she stays asleep through this because, that would be great if she stayed asleep through this whole thing. But we'll see.
Popcorn's a screamer.
She really is. Okay, so that was our little introduction. The spell that I did, I basically just put together a bowl of lavender and rose and rock salt just for like general good energy. And then I put a green and white candle. Green is for like luck and money and stuff like that. White is just for general peaceful aura and
shit going
mindfulness
well
and stuff. Yeah, just general good vibes. So I put them together. I carved our names into them, the podcast name, the date. Money and success is the anthem. Anyway.
Absolutely.
So yeah, we've just got... So if my voice sounds familiar, then you either know me or you've listened to my old podcast, which was Witches Be Crazy, that eventually turned into Weird History and Mysteries because I didn't have a consistent co-host. And I also was like going to college and starting my apprenticeship and was just generally very busy, so I couldn't keep up with it. But I come back this time with a vengeance. And I have a plan to be much better about this. So here's round two of a podcast. And I'm very excited for this.
And I'm excited to be here with you. This is a journey that I'm a virgin in, and you are taking me by the hand and gently leading me towards success.
So gentle.
So gentle.
All right. Do you want to like just get started? Like, do you just want to jump into it?
Sure. Let's jump into it. I think Raina's going to go first with a little story for us.
Yes. So originally, I was planning to do like kind of a bunch of stories that like just were fully encompassed into one big main story. And then I just got really immersed in the first story that I went to go get info for. And so I just decided to turn it into that and then maybe turn this into like a small series or something right off the bat. Damn, look at me go. So I'm so excited for this. Okay. I decided to do my story on the Playboy curse and the Dorothy Stratton murder.
Okay, so before this, like, we did not tell each other what we were doing, and I'm so interested because I haven't heard of this curse. Ooh. I've heard of a Glee curse.
I
have not heard of a Playboy curse.
So recently I started like binging. HBO has a show that's an A&E series called The Secrets of Playboy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all these people like past workers, past friends, past playmates, past. Yep. Past girlfriends of Hef's, just talking about all the awfulness of his whole empire, basically. So he died.
Thank God.
Yeah, thankfully. And it was about like 4 years after Hugh Hefner's death that they put out this show. And a lot of women came forward to speak out about their time as a bunny or their time at the Playboy Mansion. And even before the series, or around the time the series was released, multiple former employees and playmates had written and published tell-all memoirs of their time working with, for, and around Hefner.
I know Holly Madison did, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I remember that. And can I just say, I don't know a whole lot about Hugh Hefner, but I'm automatically a hater.
Yeah.
Because I know that when he died, he bought the plot next to Marilyn Monroe so he could be buried next to Marilyn Monroe. And, like, she specifically clearly would not have wanted that.
Yeah.
So I think that's really crappy of him, and I'm automatically a hater. So I can't wait for you to tell me more so I can hate him even more.
So what I dive into isn't, like, specifically just about Hugh Hefner. I want to do one specifically about him. He was horrible. He forced a lot of women into sex. He forced a lot of women into orgies. He would drug a lot of people. He would allow it to happen at his clubs and his mansion. He was fucking disgusting. One woman said something about him like fucking a dog.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Or watching somebody fuck a dog or something. Like, it just got to a point where it was like really weird and sadistic because nothing was good enough for his deluded fucking brain. So I'll go more into that at another time, but it's overall just fucking terrible. So one person who wrote and published a memoir, was one of his own personal butlers. Who wrote Dark Secrets of Playboy, which he started nearly 40 years ago, but published in 2022.
Oh my God, it was the butler.
Yeah, it was the butler.
The butler did it.
The butler. Holly Madison, one of Hefner's own girlfriends, who was on Girls Next Door, iconic show.
So iconic.
When I first started getting my nails done by Pretty Tony, she would put that on. I would go to her house and she would do my nails and she would put that on her little iPad and put it on a stand for That's us cute. To watch. But she revealed details of the suffocating circumstances, the bizarre sex rituals, and Hugh Hefner's several insecurities. And others before Holly have also released disturbing details about their life of near slavery with Hefner. Former playmate Kendra Wilkinson, also a girlfriend, and Isabella St. James have written equally disturbing memoirs about their time at the Playboy Mansion. But while watching the series and finding more information, and hearing about Hugh Hefner's like disgusting self and lifestyle, something mentioned that I feel like was kind of brief in the show. There was like a whole episode about kind of like this general idea, but I feel like they really only covered the story I'm about to go into like kind of briefly, or maybe I just wasn't paying attention enough. But what caught my attention and what I'm going to talk about more today is the murder of Dorothy Stratton, who was a former playmate in like the late 70s to 80s.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard her name, so I'm so excited to hear about this.
Okay.
I think, you know, when I think back, like, my earliest memories, like, mm-hmm. the bunnies I really remember are Kendra and Holly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think that was, I mean, probably for our age group, the first ones we really, like, saw. Because there were ones before that for the show, but I don't even remember. There were ones after that, too. And they were, to me, were the most iconic. Yeah. They, to me, were the most iconic. Like, I didn't even pay attention to anybody else. I was like, oh, they're done? Okay.
Yeah.
Me, too. What I'm going to basically just kind of deep dive into is the Playboy, or what other people call it, is the centerfold curse. Mm. And a lot of the gruesome, awful ends some of these like former playmates and innocent women had to their lives. And a lot of people think it's kind of due to getting involved with Playboy and Hugh Hefner. There have been no less than 20 playmates who have been centerfold and have died before the age of 50.
Wow.
And if we want to get nerdy with some math.
Get nerdy with it.
That works out to about 2.85% of the approximately 707 centerfold models in Playboy's history. Some very rough math suggests that about 0.7% of Americans tend to die between the ages of 20 and 50.
Okay.
So, which would make Playboy's rates of dying between the ages of 20 and 50 go up at an increase of about 400% over the average. It's somewhat interesting, however, to consider that the vast majority have died in similar ways. Drug overdoses, car accidents, murder, or suicides. Or some combination of those. The first story that I looked into, and the one that I'm going to tell you about today, like I said, is the Dorothy Stratton murder. And to me, it's like, I mean, they're all so sad because all these women just felt like, you know, they were trapped in this. Like, they couldn't get out of it. Otherwise, they would lose everything. And that's what Hugh Hefner held over all of them, was the fact that he controlled their life, basically.
Right. And, you know, for being a woman, a lot of your independence comes from your financial independence. So this being a huge opportunity, especially for young girls trying to make it big in the industry, you know, this makes sense that he'd be, you know, looming over them.
Yeah. No, he used it to his full control, absolutely, till the very fucking end of his life. So Dorothy was a Canadian model and actress, and her husband Paul Snyder was also Canadian, and he convinced her to try out for Playboy, and she ended up like getting in. Stratton was the Playboy Playmate of the Month for August 1979 and Playmate of the Year in 1980, which is sadly also the year that she died.
So like roughly how old is she?
She was probably, when she got into Playboy, she was probably like 17.
Oh, 16. Wow.
Yeah, probably.
And she was
like
already married?
She wasn't married yet, but like were together.
Oh, okay.
They might have been married. I actually don't.
I don't know. This is in the 70s.
Yeah, that's true. I did not find that piece of information, actually. Or if I did, I was not paying enough attention to catch it. They were both from Canada because he was in on a green card.
Okay.
And I guess so was she, but she got a work visa because she got to work for Playboy. So. Yeah, she was probably like 17 when she got in because she died at 20.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
so, and 1980 was the last year that she was alive. Yeah, so she was probably like 17, 18.
She's so young.
Yeah, she was super young. It's really sad. When Dorothy was 20, she had just starred in a movie and was in the process of divorcing her husband, who I before mentioned was Paul Snyder, but he was also her manager.
Interesting dynamic there.
Yeah, I couldn't find a lot in any of the articles that I found discussing like how abusive he already was to her. There was a movie that she was on. I think it's called Galaxina. It's what I have written down, but I might have typed it wrong because I feel like it was Galaxia or something. I might just be correct already. This is the movie she did before her last movie, like ever.
Okay.
But a lot of the cast members kind of noted some tension between them, but like nobody really goes into detail, or I couldn't find anything really going into detail about what that really meant. In the Secrets of Playboy, the show that I watched, there is a mention of the fact that her husband was abusive and controlling, and Hugh Hefner actually helped encourage her to leave him.
Interesting.
Because he thought he was really controlling of her, but
obviously, yeah, he just wanted to be the one to control her.
Absolutely. He wanted to be the only one who had control over her. So his motives were fucked.
It's pretty impressive that, you know, she's only been in Playboy a couple years and she's already doing movies and like,
yeah,
multiple movies.
They took her on because they knew that she was really marketable and they knew that she was going to be able to do a lot of crossover stuff and do other things. So they took her on because they knew that she had that possibility, and they were absolutely correct because it worked.
She starred, Canadian girl.
Yeah, she starred in a couple like episodes of some shows. She did some movies. Yeah, she was pretty successful.
Wow.
within it all. But so she decides to take Hefner's advice, leave her husband. She goes away, does some filming, you know, is traveling a bunch. They're writing letters to each other, and he's being really aggressive and shitty and making her feel bad for making that decision, trying to basically grovel for her to be back in his life.
As they always do.
But in that time, she ends up having an affair with, I'm going to butcher his last name, having an affair with Peter Bogdanovich?
Bogdanovich. Good for her.
Bogdanovich.
He sounds like he's got big dick energy.
Well, I mean, maybe I didn't read anything about how he treated her, so he could have been awful, but I don't think so, because I read something about her headstone and it seemed pretty sweet. I don't think I wrote it down because I suck at this, but it seemed pretty sweet. It seemed like he loved her a lot. Anyway, they end up having an affair. He was the screenwriter for the first smaller film that she did.
Okay.
So she's living with him in July of 1980, Peter.
Good for her.
Yeah. Period. And on July 31st, that's Lou's birthday.
Aww.
Not aware that his estranged wife was back in Los Angeles and living with Peter, decided to go, like, to, like, find him.
So Paul went to go find Peter? I'm saying their names right, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. It does sound...
Yeah, it sounds made up. Yes, Paul went to go find Peter.
Okay. He's going to give him the beat down.
So he hired a private investigator because he was like, my wife's cheating on me, which, like, they were kind of separated, so, like, not really. But he hired a private investigator, found out where...
Peter.
Yeah. I'm getting them mixed up now. Found out where Peter lived, decided to show up at his house and hide among the shadows just outside the director's estate, carrying a borrowed handgun, bitch didn't even have his own, intending to shoot anyone who appeared at the entrance to the property.
Just anyone.
Yeah, just whoever showed up first.
Delivering a package, yeah. Doesn't matter, dead.
Fuck you, we Girl didn't Scouts need that package. Dead. Oh, man. Poor girls.
So who gets there first?
So nobody does, actually. After several hours of inactivity, Paul was like, okay, fuck this. Nobody's coming. I'm leaving. So he gets up and he leaves.
It's anticlimactic.
Yeah. He could have just busted in and killed him within that time, but he was a bitch. So... couldn't do it. So yeah, after a while he just got up and left, and he drove up the hills overlooking the city, and he later told a friend that he was contemplating suicide at that moment, which, I mean, you just were gonna kill some random person, so, you know, you take, you give.
Your wife doesn't want
you back. Boo-hoo, move on, it's right. All right,
it happens to some, yeah, of us.
It's pretty normal. It's going to be all right. So at approximately noon on Friday, August 8th in 1980, again, just restating the time frame, Paul and Dorothy saw each other for the first time in nearly 3 months at Paul's house in West Los Angeles, which used to be both of their houses.
Okay.
But now she's, you know, living with Peter instead of Paul.
So she went back to her old house that she shared with Paul.
Yes, just to meet with him.
Okay.
So for some reason, Paul was, like, delusionally confident before the meeting that he could convince her to, like, come back. Because he's like, I convinced her to go to Playboy. I can convince her to come back to me.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
The man's a little delulu.
Yeah, no. So she shot him down. It was like, that's not happening. I'm in love with Paul.
Peter.
I'm in love with
this Peter. Is your story.
So yeah, so she shot him down. She was like, no, I'm in love with Bogdanovich.
That's worse.
That's his last name. That's technically how you're supposed to talk about people.
No, we're on a personal level with all of these people.
Yeah,
actually.
No, we knew them very well, every single one of them.
That's my good friend Peter. I'm not even gonna try.
Bogdanovich.
Yeah, that guy, my good personal friend.
Reminds me of Milkovich.
Yeah,
yeah.
I was thinking that.
They're all the same, right?
Pretty much.
Oh, will we get canceled immediately for saying that?
Ooh. That'd be a way to start
just
off.
Just give us a chance.
We're just ignorant.
We kind of. We're doing our best, okay? Anyway. So she shot him down. She's like, no, I'm in love with Peter. And she wanted to finalize the separation. She's like, I want us to, like, fully get divorced. I don't want to be married to you. I want to move on.
Been there, done that.
You have been there and done that. It's so crazy.
That's some Sabrina lore.
We love the lore. Okay. Yeah, this is like just BFFs hanging out. You're going to get a little trauma dumps here and there. We're all besties now. If you've tuned in and listened to the first even 5 minutes of this episode, we are best friends. Anyway, back to the story. So he actually agreed.
Okay.
Yeah, he was like, all right, fine. I guess we can get a finalized separation. And they, like, he agreed to meet Dorothy one more time the following week to discuss a monetary settlement. So later that afternoon.
Get that bag, sis.
Yeah, for real. Well, I mean, she was the only one with money, so.
That's true.
She just keep the bag, essentially. So later that afternoon, less than a week before Dorothy's murder, Snyder had to return the borrowed gun to its owner. I guess homie wanted it back. So
I would too.
Over the next few days, he would become obsessed with getting another gun because white boys be doing that, I guess. Historically. I don't care if we get canceled for that one. So he went to try and purchase a gun within that time. And after being told that the store could not sell him a firearm because of his Canadian citizenship, he asked his private investigator that he hired to catch his wife cheating to buy the gun for him.
Please tell me he didn't.
No.
Oh, thank God.
Of course he didn't. He was like, no, I'm not fucking doing that.
I just told you your wife is cheating on you and now you want me to buy you a gun? This is going to end really poorly. Also, I'm kind of amazed that they wouldn't sell him a gun. I mean, I guess I get it, but I'd also think that things are more lax back then, but I guess not.
Yeah, but, you know, he was Canadian, and apparently that's a problem. So.
Well, Americans love their guns, and guess what? We dislike Canadians just that's as much. True. Not
America.
Me.
Yeah, no, just
not me.
America,
just, you know,
in general, like as a general sense. Yeah, no, we're not talking about you guys either. Just like
exactly.
So yeah, no, the detective was like, no, I'm not fucking doing that. And when Paul saw the private investigator again the next day, he tried to convince him to buy him a machine gun for home protection. There
oh
were air quotes
God.
Around that. Yeah. I feel like that just, if you didn't already get a sense that this man was super delusional, this should give you a really good sense of the fact that he's delusional, because like, why would you think that if you ask someone to buy you a gun and they said no, the next day you come to them with a different reason for a worse gun?
Right. Like, you know how you told me no on that gun that could kill like one person at a single time?
Yeah.
How about we compromise and you buy me a gun that could kill 50 people at one time?
Great deal. It really is.
This is a one-time deal.
Yeah.
I can't believe that.
Yeah, he was just really dumb, I think.
I feel like there's probably easier ways.
There,
like, I don't know what they are, but
I'm sure
there are.
Out. Yeah.
If I put a pen to paper for a little bit.
If I had to really think about it, I don't know. I could come up with something different. Yeah, I don't know. His ultimate goal was just, I need a gun. I want to get a gun. Get me a gun. Get this man a gun. Like, he just wanted a fucking gun. I guess he, for some reason, thought that that was the best way to go about it. I'm not sure his thought process on that.
Yeah, especially after, like, agreeing to all this.
Yeah, I don't know if, like, in that moment, he was like, yeah, I'm gonna kill this bitch. Like, when she was like, no, I want to finalize this, he might have, like, in that moment been like, all right, you're dead.
One more chance.
Yep.
You just lost it.
Yep.
Maybe.
Because, you know, like, maybe he just snapped. He sounds pretty insane already. And he was also already really abusive and controlling, so.
Yeah, these things only get worse.
Yeah. So the private investigator talked him out of needing a home protection machine gun. Because, you know, every American needs one of those.
That's my right.
Yeah.
This is my emotional support machine gun.
It sleeps next to me in bed. So the next day, August 11th, Paul drove out into the San Fernando Valley to look at a gun he had found for sale in a newspaper. But this fucking dumbass, this guy is so stupid, and I can't believe he took such an innocent, sweet life because he's so fucking dumb. Because he got fucking lost on his way to go get the gun. So he gave up and went home.
Man, this guy is really striking out.
You know, he's like, man, if I could just get a fucking gun, everything would go so much easier. And the hardest part is getting the gun.
I feel like after, like, the third attempt, this should be your sign from the universe.
Yeah.
Just cut it out, man. Yeah.
just stop. They're giving you ample chances to redeem yourself, and just you're shitting on all of them. Yeah. So, unfortunately, on August 13th, 1980, Paul bought a used 12-gauge pump-action shotgun from a private seller he found in a local classified ad. So later that evening, in a conversation with friends, he's so fucking crazy, Paul described how he had purchased a gun that day and finished his story by cryptically saying that he was going to take up hunting.
Right.
Yeah. So later in the conversation, I guess he decides to, like, casually just start talking about playmates who had unexpectedly died, as if that's not suspicious because your ex-wife, who clearly doesn't want to talk to you, is a playmate.
It sounds like he's, like, Freudian slipping, like, all throughout this conversation. Like, he can't hold back what he's about to do.
He's just so full of shit. It's pouring out of him, basically.
Literally.
But yeah, he just, like, casually, within conversation, brought up the fact that there are playmates that have unexpectedly died. In particular, he spoke of Claudia Jennings, an actress and former Playmate of the Year who had been killed in a car accident the year before 1980, so 1979. Paul made several morbid remarks to his friends related to the problems at Playboy magazine caused by Jennings' death, including a comment about how the editors would pull nude photos of a dead playmate from the next issue if there was time.
Well, yeah, as they should.
Yeah.
And he had an issue with that?
Well, no, it was just more so, like, the fact that he was even talking about it.
Oh, okay.
He's like, so yeah, there's like, this.
Why are you bringing this
up? Yeah, he's like, there's this playmate that died, and actually it caused so many issues at the Playboy magazine because they had to pull all her nude photos.
Wow, that must suck for them.
So, like, the fact that he was even just, like, sprinkling it in the conversation, everybody was like, what the fuck? What?
Yeah.
Around noon on Thursday, August 14th, the next day, Dorothy arrived for her meeting with Paul at his rented West Los Angeles house. She had spent the morning talking with her business manager. And one of the topics that they discussed was the amount of property settlement that Dorothy would offer him. The police later found $1,100 in cash among her belongings in the house, which she had apparently brought for Paul for a down payment. Towards the end of her morning meeting, Dorothy's business manager made an observation and was like, you could avoid having to ever see him again and just have your lawyer handle this.
Oh, absolutely.
This part makes me so sad. Dorothy replied that the process would go easier if she dealt with him personally, explaining that he was being nice about everything, and finally adding, "I'd like to remain his friend."
Oh, but yeah, that twists the knife a little bit.
Yeah. So she's there around noon, Thursday, August 14th. Paul's two roommates had left by the time she got there, so it was just the two of them. It appears they spent most of the time in the living room, and then eventually they ended up in his bedroom. It was never really found out, like, how they ended up in the bedroom. Like, if they were reconciling, if they were having, you know, breakup sex, if they were...
I don't know, maybe had documents in there. Yeah, like... But, you know.
They ended up in the bedroom somehow, yeah. So, by 8 that evening, both of Paul's roommates had returned to the house. They saw Dorothy's car parked out front and noted that Paul's bedroom door was closed. So, they assumed that they had made up and wanted some, like, privacies. They just, like, didn't even bother them. But later they were alerted by Paul's private detective that he hired. And their roommates went to go check the bedroom shortly after at around 11 p.m. and discovered the bodies of Dorothy and Paul.
Oh, no.
So each had been killed by a single blast from Paul's shotgun. And both bodies were nude. So, yeah, according to the police timeline, Paul had shot Dorothy that afternoon within an hour of her arrival at the house. So within an hour, she got there around noon. So by 1 p.m., she was dead. Then committed suicide approximately an hour after the murder. So around 2 p.m., he killed himself. So I don't know if, like, he took her clothes off in that time.
Ew, that's skeevy.
Yeah.
Because I can't imagine her being like, yes, I'm here to sign divorce papers. Let's get down and dirty.
Yeah, let's fuck.
Yeah, that's probably, like, the last thing from her mind.
Yeah. Especially because last time he was like, oh my God, I love you. I miss you. Let's get back together. She was like, no, I'm in love with Peter.
Yeah.
Not you, Paul.
And then I guess it's also weird that he undressed himself.
Yeah.
In order what's that to commit about? Suicide.
Yeah. So I don't know if they were going to have sex or if he did all that in between the time.
Yeah, what was he doing for an hour? I don't want to know, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't really want to know either.
It's foul.
I didn't really look
for
that information because I was like, I don't know if I actually want to uncover this, which I guess defeats the purpose of this podcast because we're supposed to get down to the nitty gritty. But that's like a little too gritty.
I think some things are best left unsaid. Yeah,
if I don't have to search for proof of necrophilia, I'm not gonna.
Yeah. We'll just say the world may never know.
Yeah, sorry, y'all. Anyway, yeah, so around 2 p.m. he committed suicide. Sometime after midnight in the early morning of August 15th, the private detective called the Playboy Mansion and told Hugh Hefner that Stratton had been murdered. Hefner then called Peter and told him.
Oh, he had to break the news.
And after breaking the news, Peter had to be sedated because he was so distraught. Ugh. Which is so sad.
That is so sad.
Stratton's mother was told, or Dorothy's mother was told by an officer of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
So how does the private detective know that something's wrong?
So I'm assuming he was just kind of suspicious. And I mean, he's a private detective, so I'm sure he could find information. Or ample information. I might be able to, like, pull some.
Like, was he watching the house and been like, hey, her car's been there too long?
That's kind of what I feel like happened, honestly. But, yeah. I couldn't find anything on why he hired the private detective. So, if anybody has that information and wants to share it, that would be great.
Yeah, let us know.
Because I clearly did not do
now I'm invested.
Enough research. Yeah, I want to do more stories on these because there's, like I said, I want to go deeper into Hugh Hefner's disgustingness and all that entailed with that. But I have some final notes down here. So yeah, like I said, there's a lot more stories.
I'd be so down for a series.
Yeah, I want to do a little bit more about this. Holly Madison and Bridget, oh God, I don't know how to say her last name. Bridget Marquard. I don't know how to say it. Marquard. The two girlfriends that were on Girls Next Door.
Yeah.
Actually have a podcast themselves going over each episode of the Girls Next Door.
Okay, girl bosses.
I know. And talk about what was real and what was fake and what was actually going on in the mansion behind the scenes. That's good. Yeah. So I want to get really into that. But yeah, so if you guys want a more detailed story of a little bit of that craziness, go check out their podcast, because they were actually there and part of it, and they deserve to have their voices be heard. So
absolutely.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that was the first installment, I guess. Oh my
gosh, that was wild.
The Centerfold Curse.
Yeah. I believe it.
Yeah, I told you, like, I gave you a hint last night that it had a very iconic name attached to it.
You did. You know, it's almost like making a deal with the devil.
Oh, no, it absolutely is. A lot of people described Hugh Hefner as the devil because they were like,
you get all the fame and fortune and money, but you're trapped.
And he would, like, just drug women all the time and, you know, be disgusting and awful. Yeah. Can we take a quick break?
Yes.
So I can pee?
Absolutely.
And maybe smoke another bowl?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Now you're speaking my language.
All right, here we go.
Welcome back.
Yeah, nice little break.
So we heard all about Playboy Bunny, Dorothy
Stratton.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, and the horrible, gruesome, awful things that Hugh Hefner is responsible for. I hate him. Boo.
Boo.
Boo. I would like to note, though, I forgot to mention, Playboy has cut ties with the Hefner family and is no longer affiliated with them. Yeah, so Playboy itself as a publication and name is no longer affiliated with Hugh Hefner in any way.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
So for the stories that I'm gonna tell today, I'm taking it a little bit closer to home.
Ooh.
So these are both from my hometown. I've moved around a lot, but what I would consider my hometown is Apex, North Carolina.
Okay.
It's a suburb just outside of Raleigh, and the case that I'm about to talk about actually happened about 3 months after I moved there.
Whoa. Only 3 months?
3 months. But I was 11 years old, okay. I didn't really, like, hear about any of this or know what was going on.
Yeah.
I did hear, like, you know, almost like those little urban legend things, but I didn't assume they were real. And it was so far out of happened that
they're not really. A kid never does.
Yeah.
A kid never wants to believe the boogeyman is real.
Exactly. So this has been really interesting to read about because knowing now as an adult, like, oh my God, I was like,
yeah, right there.
Okay. So we're in Apex, North Carolina. The year is 2008. 17-year-old high school student Matthew Silliman, I think he's a junior at Apex High. He's generally, like, really nice, really good kid. He's an Eagle Scout. He's about to age out of the Eagle Scouts this year.
Oh, boy.
I know. He's got a steady girlfriend named Michelle. They are, you know, super, super sweet, super affectionate with each other. They're always having a good time. So they're just, in general, like, really happy, good kid.
Mm-hmm.
However, his junior year, he starts having some bouts of depression. He's struggling with bipolar disorder.
Oh.
And he ends up doing a stint at Holly Hill for a suicide attempt.
Aww.
Holly Hill is, like, the local psychiatric facility.
Yeah.
So Matthew has to go there for a little bit. And when he comes back to school, he's mostly hanging out with his girlfriend, Michelle, and his new group of friends. And so this group of friends consists of four other people. There's Drew Shaw. He's 16. He's the youngest. Adil, I did not write down his last name, but Adil, him and Adil. Matt and Adil have been friends for the longest. They've been friends since like seventh grade.
Okay.
And then there's Allegra Dahlquist and her boyfriend Ryan Hare.
Okay.
So it's these five are kind of in this new friend group. They're trying to fit in a little bit, but like also not fit in. They kind of wear all black. They're kind of not like the goths of the school, but they're just kind of, you know,
outcasts a little.
They're having a phase.
Gotcha.
They're going through a phase.
You know, we all do.
As we all do. Yeah, exactly.
It happens.
So the day before Thanksgiving, November 26, 2008, Matthew's parents report him missing. For the listeners, Raina has just put out the cell hole fire with a pan from the kitchen that still has eggs in it. This is being a witch in the 21st century, though. I've almost burnt down my house, like, twice, to be honest. And both times were with candles. So, the day before Thanksgiving, November 26, 2008, Matt's parents report him missing. He's 17 at this point. So the last reported sighting of Matt is from his girlfriend, Michelle.
Okay.
She says that the last time she saw Matt, he told her that she needed to meet him in a remote parking lot in the middle of the night.
What?
Yeah. And so he tells her he's basically implying that his life is in danger.
Oh.
And he needs to leave. He needs to lay low. He needs to get out of town. And he doesn't know when she's going to see him again. But, and, you know, she's begging him, like, tell me what's going on. And he won't tell her. But he gets in the car and he drives off. But he's not alone in the car.
Oh.
She sees this other friend group in the car. Drew Shaw, Adil, Allegra Dahlquist, and her boyfriend Ryan Hare. Ryan is 18, Adil and Allegra are 17, and Drew is 16. So on December 3rd, 2008, so this is just a few days later, there's an anonymous tip called in to the Apex Police Department, and it says there may be something wrong, or there may be somebody deceased at this abandoned trailer in New Hill, which is like the countryside just outside of Apex.
Okay.
So the police don't really think anything of this.
Oh, yeah. Why would you? You know, exactly. Why would you, like, take something seriously?
Right. They're not taking it seriously. They're driving out to this trailer just to see what's going on.
Yeah.
And
God, at least they went out there, I guess.
Right?
You know, and, like, did their job.
Thank God. Because the first thing they see is a very large hole.
Oh?
Like, a hole that's clearly been meant to be a grave.
Oh.
It's filled up with water, though.
Oh.
So they go inside the trailer, and it's covered in trash. There's cigarette butts everywhere. There's rotten food. Ew. There's pill bottles. It's basically, nobody's lived there for years, and then teenagers found it, and it became a party house.
Depression room.
Right. And that's, it's really interesting because I remember there were always, like, a lot of abandoned houses in Apex.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just see them off the side of the road.
Hmm.
And so the police are investigating this house, and they find tarot cards out in the living room.
No.
Interesting, right?
Yeah.
So they get to the bathroom.
Oh.
And inside the bathroom, they find a sleeping bag zipped up.
Oh, no, no.
Yeah. They unzip it, and they find a body. The mouth has been duct taped shut. There's a bag over the head, and the bag's been zip tied.
Oh, my God.
Right. So, you know, they open it up, and it is 17-year-old Matthew Silliman.
Oh, no.
Along with the zip ties and the plastic bag, there is a wound on his head with dried blood. There's some vomit.
Oh.
And in Sharpie, written on his arms, on what it says, I love, fail, and then there's a cross.
What?
Right? This is bizarre. So the police are like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And after talking to Michelle and her saying, the last time he was seen was with these people, they start pulling kids out of school. So they talk to Allegra first, and Allegra, she's kind of like the bad girl at school. She's really popular. They're down to do anything. They're party kids. And Allegra's like the queen bee. Yeah, good for her, right? So she tells the police that her and Matt have really started to get close because she did a stint in a psychiatric hospital.
Oh my God, trauma bonding.
Trauma bonding, literally. And Matt visited her daily. Obviously.
Repeat that last part.
So Allegra has recently been in a psychiatric facility. I'm not sure if it's the same one. What I read for her said a private one. So I don't think it's the same one. But Matt visited her daily since he's also had his struggles with mental health. And the two of them have started to get really close because of this. And there are rumors at school that the two of them are hooking up. But Allegra doesn't say it goes like quite that far. She says they kissed, and that's all. But that her boyfriend Ryan is really upset about it and very
Ratting him
jealous.
out.
Oh, yeah.
Throwing his ass under the fucking bus. You get him, girl.
So apparently, Adele told Ryan that they were a thing, an item. Because
Oh.
Adil is kind of like the least popular one in the group. Like, he's wanting to, just be like special, right?
Yeah.
So he's gonna snitch and be like,
Oh,
"Hey,
what a bitch.
Ryan, I'm your buddy. Like, I need to tell you something." Even though Matt's been his friend for like much longer. So Ryan is looking pretty suspicious, right?
Yeah.
So they go to talk to Ryan. And what Ryan says kind of throws them for a loop. He says, "I'm not upset at Matt. Like, we squashed that beef. It's not me who's upset at him. It's Roger."
Who the fuck is?
Who is
Yeah, who
Roger? Who the fuck is
the
Roger? So supposedly,
I was like, was I not paying attention? I was like, who's
no, you
Roger?
didn't miss anything. Roger Pollard is in his early 20s. And he's kind of like a local drug dealer slash enforcer slash thug, perchance a hitman. Roger wears many hats.
Yeah, Renaissance man.
Yeah. And Ryan sometimes does favors for him.
Oh.
Going around town, doing like bad kid shit,
Yeah,
right?
bad kid shit.
Ryan's recently been suspended, actually expelled from school. I think he
Ooh.
got arrested for this. But he was shooting paintballs at a school bus.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and he says that he wasn't alone in the car. Roger was with him, and Roger was actually the one driving.
Oh.
So his explanation for all this is that Roger thinks Matt is breaking up the group,
Okay.
and he wants to get rid of Matt.
But why would Roger care?
Why would Roger care that Matt hooked up with Ryan's girlfriend? I don't know.
Some 20-year-old drug dealer is gonna give a shit about your high school drama? Like, I
Right.
really doubt
Exactly. So what's happened here is that they weren't trying to hurt Matt. They were trying to protect him
Oh.
from Roger. They were going to fake his death
Oh my
to
God.
appease Roger. And then Matt was gonna get out of town.
Yeah.
So that's their plan, at least. That was what was supposed to happen. But at this point, like, they don't know that the kids don't know that Matt's body has been found.
Yeah.
They still think this is a missing persons.
Oh.
The police are kind of keeping that under their
Yeah.
sleeves. So they talk to the last person. Actually, before they talk to the last person, they trace the anonymous phone call, the phone tip that led them to the trailer. And that brought them to the door of Drew Shaw.
Ooh.
The youngest of the group.
Oh, he felt guilty.
He felt guilty and said something to his grandmother, and his grandmother called in the tip.
Go, grandma.
Right? So they bring him down to the station, and they're basically like, you know, if you didn't have anything to do with this, you need to tell us who did, because it's going to fall on you.
Yeah.
And he tells them about the last time he saw Matt, which is the same night that Michelle last saw him.
Okay.
Or actually, no, I'm sorry. It's a little bit later.
Okay.
A few days later.
Yeah.
So he says that once they pick Matt up from meeting with Michelle, they bring him to this abandoned trailer in New Hill. It's owned by somebody that is a relative of Allegra's. And he's basically hiding out there for a few days.
Okay.
So they're bringing him food. They're checking on him periodically. But he's staying alone in this trailer to hide out from Roger.
Yeah.
And the goal is that they're going to do this faking his death.
Okay.
So after a few days at the party house, they set up their plan to videotape a fake murder for Roger.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's where the tarot cards come in.
Okay.
Allegra decides to read Matt's tarot while they're doing this.
Why?
For the little added pizzazz, I guess. For the drama of it all.
Okay.
And what card does she pull, do you ask?
Oh.
The death card.
Oh my god.
But Matt actually saw that as a sign that they should keep going.
What the fuck?
To fake his death. I know. So Ryan gives Drew a baseball bat.
Oh my god.
And tells him to wait outside. And he says, "Look, man, this is for Matt's own good. We're doing this to protect Matt. But he might get scared because this is like intense, you know?
Oh my god.
And so if he runs out of the trailer, you need to hit him."
Oh my god.
Right? And Drew, you know, he's young. He just can't get down with that.
Yeah. Good for him.
And he's like, "I think I need to go home."
Yeah, good for you.
Yeah, and Drew did have a curfew. So he couldn't go through with the murdering.
Sorry, I can't help you murder him. I have to be home by 9.
Yeah, so Allegra actually drives Drew home and then comes back. So that's as far as the police know, because that's as far as Drew saw.
Yeah.
Last time Drew saw, Matt was alive.
Okay.
And so they know, like, hey, we're missing a key component of this.
Yeah.
Which is, like, what happens after Drew goes home and before we find the body.
Yeah.
So they talk to the last person in the group, Adil. And Adil drops the bombshell that pretty much solves this case. Okay. Do you want to guess?
I don't know. Just tell me.
There is no Roger.
Oh, fucking course there's not.
There's not. Ryan is the only person who's ever seen or talked to this Roger character.
Oh my god.
He says that they all knew there was no Roger. Everybody except for Matt. Oh. And they've kind of all figured it out. That this is like Ryan's persona. Almost, to, like, blame bad stuff on. But that the three of them have decided that Matt does need to die.
Oh, my god.
He's just really upset the dynamics of the group with his little stunt.
I know. What the fuck? Oh, my god.
I know!
With his little stunt, what would that be exactly?
Kissing Allegra.
Oh, my god.
And having a thing with her.
So you're sad that your dick is small, so you're going to kill a kid? That's your solution?
So Adil tells him that after Drew leaves and Allegra returns to the house, Ryan hits Matt over the head with a hammer, kind of out of nowhere. So that's where the head wound with the dried blood comes from.
Yeah.
And Matt's like, hey, dude, what the fuck? And he's like, yeah, well, for the video, I have to make it look real, obviously. So at this point, Matt's starting to get a little suspicious after, you know, getting bludgeoned in the head with a hammer.
Mm-hmm.
And
as one would.
As one would, yeah, right?
That seems
trust
fair.
Your gut.
Yeah.
So they bring out wine. And Allegra douses his wine with horse tranquilizers.
Oh my god.
So he
Where did they even get that?
This is Apex.
I guess it's true.
This is, you know, there wasn't a whole lot to do back in 2008 besides drugs.
Yeah.
So he's starting to nod off
mm-hmm.
after drinking this drugged wine.
Yeah.
He starts to vomit.
Oh.
And at that point, they put duct tape over his mouth.
Oh my god.
And then they put
drown him?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
And then they put the plastic bag over his head to suffocate him.
Oh my god.
Allegra puts the zip tie over his neck, but not very tight. And then Ryan goes back and tightens it.
What a bitch.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that hole that they dug, it was raining that night, so it fills up with water, and they're not able to bury the body.
Mm-hmm.
So instead, Allegra decides to write those markings on his arm and make it seem like a ritualistic killing.
Oh my.
Which obviously did not work.
Yeah, no.
It was pretty obvious who did it, especially once Adil confessed. He did get a plea deal for that.
Oh.
And Ryan, since he is 18, is convicted of first-degree murder.
Good.
Which automatically comes the life sentence in North Carolina. So he's going to be there for life.
Yeah.
Allegra and Adil both plead guilty to second-degree murder. Allegra gets a minimum of 30 years, and Adil gets a minimum of 32 years.
Jesus.
And then Drew gets an accessory after the fact charge,
mm-hmm.
Which had him in prison for 45 months. I don't know how much of that he actually served, though.
Yeah.
So, Drew is the only one who would be out by now.
Jeez.
But yeah, isn't that crazy?
Oh my god. And that happened, like, not crazy far from where we are right now.
Right.
Whoa. I have a hometown story that I'll share eventually. That's pretty chilling. So that'll be fun. My mom was terrified for months after it happened because it happened like right up the road from us.
Oh god.
Like, literally like a few blocks away. So it's pretty crazy. I'll get into that one day.
I haven't asked my mom, but I do want to know what if she was like aware of this happening while it was happening. I mean, I assumed she had to have known.
Yeah, she at least knew a little bit.
Yeah, so I wonder what her thoughts on that were. But, I mean, I went to that same high school and...
That's crazy. Yeah. I wonder if she was, like, scared as hell about sending you to that school. She's probably like, right? No. This makes me so nervous.
Yeah,
My mom sent me to a college charter school that was only open for a year because she didn't want me to go to the local high school because of all the shit that happened at our local high schools.
Damn.
Yeah. She's like, I really don't want you to be in that environment, so I'm gonna send you to this school with only like 50 students, so have fun. It was like, it was really, I think it was more than that the first year, but my graduating class was only 75 kids.
Wow.
Yeah, so
that's itty bitty.
Yeah, it was teeny.
Well, anyways, the last thing I have is so up to date.
Ooh.
I'm so interested to see if you've heard anything about it. When I was also in high school for a couple years, I lived in Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And
I didn't know that.
You didn't know that?
No.
This was my freshman and sophomore year of high school. And actually, a girl that I went to high school with and had at least one class with
mm-hmm.
went missing Thursday night.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Thursday night?
Thursday night. So we're recording this on Sunday. So Thursday night. So Carly Russell. Carlethea Carly Russell. She's 25 years old. She has a bachelor's degree in psychology from Auburn at Montgomery. She is currently going to Jefferson State Community College and studying to be an RN.
Okay.
And she is working part-time at a day spa in this very large strip mall type thing called The Summit.
Okay.
In Hoover, Alabama. Or Birmingham. It's pretty close to, like,
yeah,
in between. So Thursday night, she leaves work at about 8:20 p.m. She stops at a Tzatziki's at a strip. It's like a Greek food place.
Okay. I was like, what?
She stops at the Tzatziki's at this other kind of strip mall place called the Colonnade at about 9 p.m. to pick up food for her family.
Okay.
For dinner. And then she heads home. As she is on the I-459 South going towards exit 11, she places a 911 call. This is at 9:34 p.m. She places a 911 call to report a toddler alone on the highway.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Was it a doll?
Not sure.
Oh, my God. I've heard of the urban legend where creeps would, like, put dolls on the side of the highway thinking it would, like, make women pull over, and then they would snatch them.
Well, she did pull over.
No.
She pulled over and she gets on the phone to call a relative. I believe this is her brother's girlfriend. She's on the phone with her brother's girlfriend and telling her about the situation as she's pulling off onto the shoulder of the highway.
No.
And she tells her sister-in-law, or her sister-in-law hears her say, "Are you okay?" to this child, but she doesn't hear an answer. The next thing she hears is a scream.
No.
So because Carly's already called 911, police are en route.
Yeah.
And they arrive at the scene fairly quickly.
Yeah.
She's only 10 minutes away from home.
Oh, my God.
When the police arrive, her red Mercedes is on the side of the road. It's running. The door is open. Her phone and her wig are on the ground.
Oh, my God.
In the car is her purse with her AirPods and her Apple Watch.
Oh, my God.
Carly is nowhere to be seen, and there is no child anywhere to be seen. The Hoover police reported that there were no reports of a missing child.
What the fuck?
Yeah. So a single witness reported seeing a gray vehicle with a light-complected male standing outside of Carly's vehicle.
Okay.
And then, I believe it was Friday night, Saturday during the day, they posted traffic cam footage. And in the traffic cam footage, you can see Carly's car put the hazards on, go over to the shoulder, and she kind of slows down and continues to go slow before coming to a full stop. So it almost looks like she's, like, trying to go slow so in case there's a child, like, running around, right? So she's, like, keeping an eye out.
Yeah.
I can't see. I watched the video, and it is kind of hard to see because it's from a little bit farther away, and when you zoom in, you lose some of that detail.
Yeah.
But I don't see another car stopping. However, I do see a male standing on her passenger side.
Oh, my God.
And where she is, there's, like, some open grass, a line of trees, and behind those trees are a subdivision of houses. So it's kind of bizarre.
There's no space.
There's a, yeah, and it almost looks like the man comes from the tree line because you don't, I didn't see a car stop. Towards the end of the video, there is another car that, like, puts on its hazards, drives a little bit slower, but then turns off the hazards and continues to go. So not really sure what that's about. At the time that Carly was last seen before disappearing. So at the time that Carly was last seen from before her disappearance, she was wearing a black shirt, black pants, and white Nike shoes. She's got black hair, brown eyes. She's 5'4", 25 years old, between 150 and 160 pounds.
God, 25.
Yeah. Like, literally, I had a class with her.
Jesus.
And actually, I always remember her being very nice to me, which is why I wanted to talk about this.
Yeah.
And because her wig was found at the scene, her hair would have been braided down to the scalp. That actually brings us to last night, Saturday night.
God.
At approximately 10:45 p.m., Carly returned safe to her parents' house.
What?
So there's not a whole lot of details right now.
Yeah.
Because this is how up to the date, like up to the minute this is.
Mm-hmm.
It appears, so she lives with her parents.
Yeah.
And it appears as though she appeared alone at the residence, like knocked on the door, and then was taken to the hospital for an examination. And there are not a lot of details about what has happened to her.
Mm-hmm.
So the police did a press release and reported, you know, that they are overjoyed that Carly was found.
Yeah.
Obviously, this is the best case scenario.
Yeah.
This is what everybody was hoping and praying for, was for Carly's safe return home.
Mm-hmm.
So thank God for that. And she had been missing for about 48 hours.
Yeah.
And what they really wanted to do is just allow her time with her family, by herself, just to, you know, heal physically and mentally from the past 48 hours.
Yeah.
Like, they're not trying to talk to her. Huh?
Was she hurt?
There aren't a whole lot of reports about that. Like, yeah. This is very, very intimate with the family.
That's so strange to go missing for only 48 hours. I feel like that's a really short period of time.
Well, actually, right when I was walking up to your apartment, I was reading a Facebook post, and I'm not friends on Facebook with Carly, but a lot of people that I am friends with on Facebook are. I think I saw we have like 27 mutual friends.
Whoa.
And I saw somebody reposted a post from her boyfriend. And her boyfriend, you know, it's a long post talking about how glad he is to see her, how, you know, he would have stopped at nothing to find her.
Mm-hmm.
It was very, very sweet. And one of the things he said is that she is healing physically and emotionally from what has happened to her. He said she has been fighting for her life for the past 48 hours, and that, you know, eventually she will give details about her kidnapper.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And so, you know, at the time that I was writing most of these notes, Carly was still missing.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to do any speculation.
Yeah.
Because I had seen posts from Carly's mother, you know, just talking about how, because their main goal is trying to find her, you know, that's not, if it's not helpful and it's not factual, it's just getting in the way.
Yeah.
And now that she's found, you know, obviously, there's not a whole lot to talk about because she's, you know, she's safe home, which is what everybody wanted. And we are so, so glad to hear that. And I'm very interested to see what she says happened. Yeah. And hopefully by the next show, I can give an update.
Yeah, that'd be great. That's insane. That's like, oh my God. I think because I've just had an interest in this kind of stuff for so long, and I've been like researching a lot of stuff, and a lot of the stuff I cover is stuff that I feel like has happened a while ago, I forget that like this shit is still recent and like happening and like going on all the time.
Yeah. And you know, to me, especially at the beginning, it sounded a lot like she was going to be trafficked.
Yeah.
And so scary. And now hearing, and I guess, you know, because the police responded so quickly, she had already called 911, and it became such a national case. Like, Thursday night, I logged on to Facebook, and it was all people that I knew from Alabama talking about it.
Yeah.
By Friday morning, it was everybody that I knew was talking about it.
Yeah.
I saw it national. And so I think just because of how quickly it that spread. That response was, like, perhaps they couldn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, there was no avenue to escape.
I feel like that's one of the many pros and blessings of social media. That's so insane. God, I hope she, you know, recovers mentally and obviously physically. I just know that that's probably such... I mean, I obviously don't know. I could assume that that's probably such a hard thing to deal with and to realize that you got out of that situation pretty quickly, where some people don't get out at all. It's probably like such a weird feeling to be burdened with.
Yeah, but you know, she's got, it sounds like she's got a really great support system of friends and family, and you know, I'm sure everybody is there for her.
Yeah. Ugh, God, that's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely.
But to tie in how to navigate the awfulness of the world, we're going to introduce you to one of our few segments that we're going to have on the show. We're going to cycle through some stuff for you guys. It's going to be really fun. Some little extracurricular activities. And today we decided to pull some tarot for you guys and give you our reading and interpretation of the general, you know, energy of you and your life right now. Hopefully if you resonate with it, that's great. If not, then it's not meant for you, and that's okay. So we're gonna go ahead and get started with some of that.
And I'll be honest, I'm not much of a tarot reader. I, you know, tend to look up everything.
Oh, I actually wanted to make a note of that. If for any of my bad memory girlies or ADHD neurodivergent babes, your ability to memorize things does not determine your ability to read. It does not.
Yeah, it's about interpretation. Yeah,
it's intuitive. It's interpretation. You know, what's meant for you is meant for you, and what's not will find its way to who it's meant to go to. Don't ever put pressure on anything. It's all about your intent when doing everything, when communicating with the spiritual realm. Just always feel comfortable and confident. And once again, trust your fucking gut. So absolutely. Listen to what your shit is telling you.
I'm actually going to be, taking a reference from this little handy dandy book called A Pocket Guide to Tarot Card Archetypes by Abby Clark.
Cute. We're going to have a multitude of references today. I read every time. I read the meanings every time I do it because my memory just really sucks. I can't memorize fucking 27 major arcana and then all the minors. Like, it's just,
yeah, that's too much memory
for that. Yeah, I unfortunately just don't. But this book is meant specifically for these cards, but we'll have double reference with yours, and we'll get to kind of put them together and see maybe what it might mean.
Word. So I feel like that's the whole point of this. It's like, put our brains together.
So I'm actually just gonna leave it up. Oh, there's two more.
Ooh, so you got a 5-card spread.
Yeah, so we have a little 5-card spread here.
Raina's the kind of host that has Mountain Dew Baja Blast in their fridge and a bong rip ready on the table. And that's what I love about them.
I mean, it's a stoner house, too, so there's always good snacks on deck.
And, I love that.
Yeah, like drinks, plenty of drinks to choose from because I'm addicted to soda.
Me so too. There's
always options.
I'm a Dr. Pepper girly for sure. Yeah,
same. Always Dr. Pepper. I'm also a Coca-Cola girly. I was addicted to Coca-Cola for a long time when I was in high school.
I love a good Coke to, like, ease my nausea. A nice ice-cold DP will revive you.
It really will. It brings you to life.
And, you know, of all the... How many flavors are there? 23?
Yeah.
Of all the 23 flavors in Dr. Pepper, I would say that a lot of them are witchy.
Yeah, no, witches for sure made the shit. Witches made a lot of shit.
Exactly. Dr. Pepper, for it. The drink that is fully endorsed by witches.
You heard it here first at Green Witch Cottage Podcast that Dr. Pepper is the official drink of witches. So,
but Baja Blast comes to a close second.
Yeah, if anything, they're tied, actually. Those are the top two for sure.
Mm-hmm. So what other cards did you pull?
So I got the 10 of Cups, the 3 of Cups, Queen of Wands, the High Priestess.
Ooh. The High Priestess is one of my favorites. I love the High Priestess's energy. So what I have for the 10 of Cups is we did pull every card upright.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Being the card of belonging and true happiness, which makes sense because it's the end of that series, the completion of the emotional cup journey.
Cup journey. Yeah, mine says this card represents a permanent, everlasting, happy ending.
Mine says the Three of Cups is about strong bonds and celebration.
Yeah, mine says this represents the closest between friends.
Hell yeah, it does.
When possible, you celebrate all sorts of events and special occasions with treasured companions to the maximum.
So the Wands is like the action card. Or the action suit, I should say. And this is the Queen. So for me, I see that this is about ideas flourishing, a renewed sense of energy, just kind of being revived, like when you have a nice ice-cold DP. This is not product placement. We are not getting paid.
We're not getting sponsored. We just really fucking love Dr. Pepper. So mine says the Queen of Wands denotes a person who is absolutely straightforward and takes challenges head-on without hesitation. If and when they have to clear something in the air, they will see it. They will see to it that they are heard. That's kind of what we're doing with this podcast.
Yeah, we are making our voices heard. Honestly, low-key, I'm excited about the High Priestess. I was trying to channel a little more Myra Rose.
The High Priestess.
So this is the card of like persistence, of connection, of like deep feminine energy, and yes, I love that.
Slay.
Us?
Okay. Mine says in a reading, this card advises that the answers to your questions are hidden from you, and it's now the right time for you to look for them.
Search within yourself.
Yeah. What's hidden from you is not too hard to find. It just requires patience. This card also indicates what we've been repeating this whole fucking episode, that your intuition is required. Spiritual guidance is before you.
Hell yeah.
And that's, oh my gosh, this is an introduction for you guys. Are we spiritual
guidance? Oh. Am I spirit guiding somebody right now? Oh my God.
She's crazy, yo.
She's crazy.
That's so crazy. I'm legit like blown away.
This is a good reading.
I'm reminded every time I do a reading, because I don't try to do them very often. I just feel personally that it exudes a lot of energy for me, and there's a lot of times that they want to tell me things that I don't want to fucking hear. So
it is draining sometimes.
But I find that every time I do it, I get better at it. Like a lot of the cards I pull are more accurate and more applicable, so that's pretty cool to witness myself grow as a tarot reader. It's fun.
It is really cool. And sometimes I'm just in a mood where I'm like, you know, I don't want to deal with you right now. Yeah. Like sometimes they want to deal with me, and sometimes they don't.
Yeah.
And I think that's also good to like recognize if you're having a hard time.
Boundaries are important.
And sometimes
even with your spiritual guidance.
Yeah. Sometimes you just need to put it away. Take a deep breath. Try another time. It's like when you shake the magic eight ball. And it says, try again later.
Yeah. Yeah, just give yourself a breather. That's one of the most important things with witchcraft is to be comfortable. So if you're, like, stressing yourself to get answers, you're not going to get them.
Yeah, the more you push, like, the harder it becomes.
Yeah. So just let yourself ease into it. Have a good time with it. Be comfortable. Absolutely.
Take a deep breath. Close your eyes.
So the last card that we pulled was the Three of Wands. Or is that the Five of Wands?
I can't tell.
That is the Five of Wands. My bad.
I don't know. The Five of Wands says strife and misunderstandings. Mm. That's no bueno. So maybe be on the lookout for that.
Yeah, maybe. Let's see. So mine says, in a reading, this card represents a process of debate. You're debating for something that you want very badly or a change that you want to make in your life for the greater good.
Hmm.
Remember, by engaging in a competition, you're not fighting, nor should you be hurting other people or yourself. Put your skills to the test in order to obtain all that you've been longing for with a clean strategy and with a clear mind.
Okay.
So I don't feel like that's applicable to me in my personal life at all right now. I feel like maybe it could be saying for us specifically to not do things the wrong way with this, to like, you know, keep it clean and pure and just keep having fun. For anybody else listening, if that applies to you, just don't get in your own way, basically.
Yeah. Or give us your thoughts.
Yeah.
What do you get from that reading?
Oh my God, I just opened it right back up to this page.
Well, and yeah. You know, sometimes with tarot, it's something that like you read it and you're like, I don't get it. And then like 2 days yeah. later, you're like, oh, yeah. And there's also times like
that was the last card that I pulled. It could have just fallen out and just not be meant for this reading.
Could be.
So who knows? It's all just kind of a fun little guessing game.
That's all the universe is. And we just try our best, besties.
That's all you can do. But that was the first episode of Greenwich Cottage Podcast.
Oh my gosh. I love you. This was so much fun.
This was so much fun. I'm so excited for the future of this show. And let us know what you think. Be sure to share this with anybody you know. Yeah, just I hope you really enjoyed it because we really enjoyed doing it. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, I would love to do this every week and just, you know, chit chat about the spooky ooky and the witchy. And- yeah. You know, bring have you guys y'all along engage with us.
Yeah. And like have a good time and tell us what you want to hear about. Like if there are things that you have always wanted to hear more about but don't want to do the research yourself, let us do it for you.
Absolutely. That's what we love.
Yeah. No, I had so much fun getting all this information and I promise I'm going to be getting better at gathering information. This is the first time I've done it in a really long time. So just bear with me. But yeah, if you like us, be sure to share us. You can follow us on Instagram at GWC Podcast. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, you can email us at gwcpodcast@gmail.com. I think that's it for this episode then. I feel like we should mention that we've been smoking this whole time. We hope you guys are too.
You absolutely should be.
Yeah, that's part of this.
This is just a giant sesh.
Yeah, no, this is just a giant sesh with two people who are super knowledgeable on things that you don't really want to know about, but you're going to learn about today anyway, and you're going to kind of really love it. Yeah, and then you're going to get really excited for our next sesh.
All over you.
Yeah, all over you, baby.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, thank you guys for joining us. We hope you enjoyed, and we'll talk to you guys next time.
Yeah, we'll talk sweetly into your ear next week.
I don't know how we should end it. Should we just say bye or like what should we do?
I don't know. I think we need to come up with something punchy.
Punchy.
We'll think about it and we'll edit it in later.
Okay. Maybe I'll just end it like that.
Okay. And
boom.